do we want the Narnia books to be turned into movies at all?
Yes, but also no.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Talking Beasts, NarniaWeb.com podcast. I'm Glumpuddle.
I'm Mel.
I'm Dutt.
And today the topic is adaptation. This is Mel's idea. What's a good adaptation? What do we want? What do we expect out of a good adaptation? Why is it so hard to turn a book into a movie? But first, we got a really good response to our episode 2 weeks ago, which was about some of the statements William Moseley made about the Silver Chair release date. And also the issue of recasting and how we all felt about recasting actors. And Mel, you put together a list of some comments you wanted to go over. What have we got?
All right. We have Diggory9, who says storytelling logistics play a big part into casting actors. He'd like to see some teenagers or actors in their mid-20s. That kind of shows that Narnia isn't a place for kids, but adults and young adults, too.
Yeah, as far as logistics, that is something we didn't talk about very much. It's true. Like, one of the reasons they tend to cast younger characters as older actors is because, you know, they're over 18, so there aren't, you know, child labor laws and things like that. It's just a lot easier to deal with.
And then they're probably a little bit better at their craft as well.
That too.
Yeah. Practiced it more.
Yeah, there's a lot of it's challenging, especially when you're dealing with green screen and special effects and using your imagination. It takes an actor with a lot of skill to pull that off, and it's a lot easier when you have someone older. So that is true. That is a concern. We'd all love it if they could find, ideally, actors that really are that age, but that is a concern we didn't really address in the last episode. Dot, what are your feelings on casting actors in their 20s to play characters that are like, you know, 14 and 15.
I think they just need to adjust the script accordingly, because Ben Barnes was old enough that when I watched the movie, I felt like he should have been questioning why Caspian wasn't king already.
Yeah.
If he was actually a 14, 15-year-old person, then him not being king yet makes sense. But when he's closer to 18, there's no reason for Miraz to still be king.
That's a good point. So if they had addressed that in the story, it would have been okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay.
All right. Gandalf the Grey wrote, all necessities must be done, even a recast.
So just whatever it takes. Yeah. That was kind of the position there. Okay, if they have to recast, then recast. And I was surprised people were more open to the idea of recasting than I thought. Most of what I've seen up to now is, recasting is the worst thing ever. But we got some responses of people that were open to the idea.
Well, it's been long enough that I think we're ready for just about anything, whatever it takes to get the next movie out.
That's probably true. And it has been so long, like the necessity of recasting is a little more clear than it would have been if they'd only waited a few years. That's probably true. Thanks for the comments, guys.
Mm-hmm. Anne Finwen wrote, recasting is the least of our worries. Even with the actors we didn't care for, the cast wasn't one of the real weak points. Whatever it takes to make a good adaptation, that's what they need to do.
Yeah, so that is true. Like, obviously, last episode was about recasting the actors. But yeah, obviously, even if you cast the best actor, there's a lot more that goes into a great adaptation and making a great character than just casting the right person.
Yeah.
Right. And the other thing we talked about was which movie should follow Silver Chair. And it looked like the fan favorite was Horse and His Boy. Narnia Fan 7 suggests, I think it could work fine if they approach it strictly a marketing sense, kind of like Rogue One, for the most part, standalone story within a series and featuring characters from the previous film in minor roles.
You did see Rogue One, right, Dot?
Yes.
All right. So what do you think of that?
From the sense in marketing, comparing it to Rogue One, I think that could work, and that it's a prequel with some familiarity in the setting, but we don't necessarily know the people who are the main characters. Mm-hmm. I could see it working, but it would take some doing, because that's not quite common with like book adaptations.
Yeah, and I would say, like, Rogue One came along when, we've made 7 Star Wars movies. Let's think of something different we can do. Star Wars is just everywhere. And also the idea of, like, Star Wars has this vast, vast appeal.
Yeah.
It's so well-known. It has instant brand recognition. So even a small little side story of Star Wars can still appeal to a lot of people. Can Chronicles of Narnia have that same impact on a mass scale? I don't know.
Well, and the other thing is that you with Horse and His Boy, there's only one of those. Like, Rogue One is setting it up for they're going to do more in that style. Right. So,
yeah.
Right.
It is an interesting idea, though.
Thank you so much for the comments, everybody. Keep them coming. But today's topic is adaptation in general. What does it take to turn a book into a movie, basically? And we're going to get later in the episode, we'll get into more specifics of what is so different about why are books and movies so different and why are changes sometimes necessary? How do we feel about them? But like I said, let's not just assume that the Chronicles of Narnia should be movies at all. And Dot is smiling at me. Well, Dot, I'll just go ahead and throw it out there. Do you think the Chronicles of Narnia should be turned into movies? Is this really a good idea? Why or why not?
I just can't make up my mind is the problem. Yes, I love these stories. Yes, I want to see them visually, but they're kind of challenging to adapt into appealing films. They're not the typical thing you see in all these big budget blockbuster things. Do I want to see it? Yes, but also no.
So what was your first reaction when you heard they were going to make The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe into a movie?
Oh, I was very excited. Very, very excited.
Mm-hmm.
I was also very excited. I was maybe a little bit more naive then, and I didn't realize, you know, how much could go wrong. But, you know, The Lion, the Witch,
overall,
and the Wardrobe.
Overall, did you like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movie?
Overall, yes, I liked Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Okay. I was pleased.
Just to clarify that, yeah.
I'd like him to keep trying. I want to see my ideal Narnia movie made sometime. So, yeah, I want him to keep trying.
So as long as they do it exactly like what's in your head, then yeah, they should make a Narnia movie. Okay.
Yes, of course.
Now, that said, we'll get into changes as far as when something is changed, when it's not exactly like the book, that gets into more of, I think, what you're talking about, Dot, is, oh, well, it's cool to see. That's the positive aspect of having to change something for a movie. It's, oh, it's cool to see a new version of it.
Yeah.
At the same time, oh, but I think C.S. Lewis got it right the first time, and why are they changing it? Anyway, we'll dive into that. I see around the forum sometimes this idea that I'll criticize something about the movies or whatever, and they'll say, well, it's better than getting no movie at all. How would you guys react to that kind of thinking that, well, it's good. We just want to get a Narnia movie. It's great if it's good, but a bad Narnia movie is better than no Narnia movie at all. It sounds like you guys aren't on that side.
No. If it's a bad movie, I don't want to watch a bad movie. I think part of the problem is everyone has a different idea of what makes a movie bad.
Right.
But I don't want to watch a bad movie.
So you just assume they have it not get made at all then if it's going to be bad.
Yeah, I'm not going to spend like $10 on the movie ticket.
I think some people just want to see a Narnia movie, you know, like one way or another. I don't want to see fauns and centaurs and Mr. Tumnus and Glenstorm
and the landscape of Narnia. And I can see the appeal there. But on the other hand, it's like Narnia is more than just a stage setting. It's how the characters behave. And if they can't get that right, it's not Narnia. You should make your movie with a different name.
Exactly. And for me, it's, the books are the books. They're not incomplete. They don't need adaptations. They are what they are. They're perfect the way they are. But if someone's going to make a good movie adaptation of it, no objection. That'd be awesome. But it's not like they have to make it, that the books are missing something if they don't get made into movies. Do I want the Narnia books to be turned into movies? Yes, if they're good. And I would say now in the year 2017, I would like to see more fantasy movies that aren't cynical about fairy tales and right and wrong. Old-fashioned ideals and morals. I think that a lot of modern fantasy, as an example, like even the Marvel movies, there's just, I think, a cynicism. They have to kind of wink at the camera and say, hey, just so you know, we're not taking this, all this right and wrong stuff, standing up for what's right, truth, justice, the American way. We're having fun here. Just go with it. And for me, the appeal of the Chronicles of Narnia, more than anything else, is that I'm kind of a cynical person by nature, by default, and I can't be cynical when I'm reading Chronicles of Narnia. And so, never mind Narnia, I would just love to see movies that aren't cynical about right and wrong that way and kind of aren't afraid to be kind of simple in their approach to that. So I would just love to see that movie. And sure, why not do it out of Narnia? Why not? But I think there's a void here as far as movies that I would love to see somebody fill. So we've talked a bit about what we don't want, I think, out of the Narnia movies. But what do you want? Just generally speaking, when you go see a Chronicles of Narnia movie, okay, Dot, the lights have gone down, the movie's about to start, you just paid $10 to $15, maybe 20 or 25 if you saw it in IMAX. What are you hoping to see as a fan?
I just want to experience a good story. Narnia is a good story. Even if the movie turns out different from the book, if it's still a good story, I'm going to have fun.
Okay, so then you're not exactly looking for, oh, I read the book, now I just want to see the book.
Well, that would be nice, but...
But the main thing is, the book was a good... There was a good story in the book. Well, I'm assuming this will be a good story as well in the movie. That's the reason for the excitement. Okay.
Yeah, I do fall somewhere on the they better not change that, because that's what I want to see. I want to have the emotional experience of, you know, participating in some particular scene. And I guess my favorite example of this is Two Towers, is where they're going along and they're recreating Faramir's dialogue. And you're like... Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. And then they go and they do a 180 and it's totally different from the book. And that's not what I want to see. I want to keep that feeling of excitement and whatnot.
Okay, so it just sounds like Dot is more, oh, I just want to see a good movie, even if it's different from the book. And I think, Mel, you're more of the perspective of, for you, the enjoyment is seeing the book come to life.
Yeah, and it's one of those, I don't expect it to be word for word, but I do expect it to kind of recreate the emotional arc that you experience reading the book.
I can see that.
Yeah, I definitely think most people would agree with you there. And we'll get into tones and themes later as far as most of us would agree that even if they change literal things, it's more important to get the general feeling, the tone, the themes, the emotional experience of the book, to translate that to film one way or another. We can get into some of that. The three Walden films, you know, we talked about, is it, you know, we only want a Narnia movie if it's good, basically. We all kind of agreed with that. So obviously the three Walden movies aren't perfect, but overall, are they worthwhile, would you say? Starting with you, Mel, are you glad, you know, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Prince Caspian, Dawn Treader, overall, are you glad that they exist?
Yeah. Yeah, they set a bar, and some of them set the bar higher than others.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and I think they are making a difference in how people see Narnia. And I think that it's showing up in the fan art. It's showing up in the stage adaptations. So people are looking to the movies as a visual representation of the story.
Yeah, that's when we get into, do we want the movies to exist? Kind of one of the reasons I think I was phrasing it that way was, this is bigger than us. You know, this is how a lot of people, for better or worse, this is going to be their only exposure to Narnia. Maybe their only exposure to anything by C.S. Lewis. So it better somewhat, you know, that for me, that raises the bar as far as the level of quality that I think they have to hit just as a movie, and then accurately represent the themes and the ideas in the book.
Right.
So as far as... That's kind of what I was secretly getting at with, are you okay with the fact that there's a lot of people where this is their only Narnia they're ever going to see?
I mean, Narnia Web exists. So
that's true.
Like,
that's true.
Would it exist if the movies had never been made?
Probably
I don't
not.
Know.
Probably not.
So
I'll
mean,
grant
that
you that
at least
one.
Is a good thing.
Okay. So apart from, we wouldn't be here in the first place if not for the movies, apart from that, are you okay with the Walden Narnia films existing?
Yeah. It's a reluctant yes, but it's a yes.
Yeah. Are you? I mean, I would agree it's a reluctant yes, just because I would say that I have to break it apart a little bit. Wardrobe and Caspian, I think they're okay movies, okay adaptations in different ways. Dawn Treader, no. in my personal opinion, Dawn Treader is not a good movie, and it's a terrible adaptation, and it's I don't like seeing C.S. Lewis's name in the credits. So for me, like, Wardrobe and Caspian, even though not perfect, glad it's worthwhile that it exists. But Dawn Treader, I wish it didn't exist. I know there's some listeners that like Dawn Treader. Thank you for listening. That's fine. I just agree to disagree on that one. We're going to continue this discussion, but first, here's your C.S. Lewis Minute.
I'm William O'Flaherty. This is a C.S. Lewis Minute. Any true fan of the Narnia stories knows it all began with a picture. But do you know when this happened in C.S. Lewis's life? Lewis was blessed to get many of his ideas for stories by seeing pictures in his mind. At the age of 16, according to an essay he wrote in 1960, Lewis had a vision, quote, of a fawn carrying an umbrella and parcels in a snowy wood. Yet it took more than 25 years for him to attempt to do anything with this idea. However, when Lewis tried to write the story, later as an adult, it didn't come together at all. Finally, in 1948, almost 10 years after his failed attempt, he was back to writing it, and within 12 months, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe was ready for the publisher.
William O'Flaherty is the author of C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell and the creator of EssentialCSLewis.com. That's going to be a regular feature on the show. All right, so adaptation means making something more suited for new conditions, basically. The definition is something like that. That usually means making changes. Now, generally speaking, just trying to get into the heart of what's your adaptation philosophy. How do you feel about, maybe it's a little weird asking, how do you feel about changes? I'm sure the answer is kind of, the honest answer is probably, well, it depends on the change.
Right.
But yeah, just generally speaking, how do you feel about changes as far as what kinds of changes are, can you come up with a generalization for what kind of changes are acceptable and where have they crossed the line?
If it makes the movie better, because like with Hunger Games in the books, the point of view is very restricted, but the movies were able to expand that a bit more and make the world bigger, and I thought that helped the story a lot. That's a good change.
Okay, so for you, if it makes the movie better, you're probably going to say that's a good change in most cases. Okay.
Oh, boy. What is this one? I take them on a case-by-case basis, and I'm not sure developed a generalization on adaptation yet.
You could just give a specific example, if you want, of something you didn't like and why.
Well, let's see. I didn't like the waterfall scene in *Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe*. I thought it was a little bit too much. Force.
The melting river, you mean?
Yeah.
Where they're crossing, and okay.
It was too much of a cheap thrill, and it's like, no, you skipped over the genuine scare a little bit with the witch instead of Father Christmas, or Father Christmas instead of the witch, and you tried to drown Lucy instead, and it's like, okay, why did you do that? That didn't further the movie for me. So that would be a bad change.
Because in the book, it's more about it's more quiet. It's more the suspense of we're hiding. Is the witch going to find us?
Yeah.
And in the movie, it's, we got to get away. Here come the wolves. Here comes the waterfall. Blah, blah, blah.
The very gangster wolves.
Right, that's true. That just feels like a different thing. That actually reminds me a lot of, if you go to the general movie discussion thread, of which Dot is the moderator, I made a thread called Adaptation, Where is the Line? And there's a great quote from C.S. Lewis where he just seems so relatable to me as a Narnia lover, where he's talking about the time he went to see an adaptation of a movie or an adaptation of a book that he wasn't happy with. It was a film adaptation of King Solomon's Mines. And basically, where in the book it's sort of slow and suspenseful and it's quiet, and in the movie they added all these action scenes, and that it just felt like I was reading a Narnia web post, and I'm reading that. That's from his 1947 essay on stories. And he concludes by essentially saying, okay, the filmmaker has every right to make the best movie they can, acknowledges the need to make changes, but then he felt, but this one crossed the line. What's the point of making this book in the first place if the only way to adapt it to film is to ruin it? So I'm kind of somewhere in the middle there. On one hand, I understand. Like, the number one thing for me is make a good movie.
Right.
If you make a perfect word-for-word recreation of the book, you just try to match every page as closely as you can. Perfect recreation of the book. But it's not a good movie. Well, how could you call that a good adaptation? You took a great book and you turned it into a bad movie. You know, I don't care how much the dialogue matches. That's not a good adaptation, right? I remember kind of a lot of the Harry Potter movies, I remember walking out of those. I was really kind of fuzzy on the book and I remember a lot of it. And I'd say, someone asked me, what'd you think of it? Well, this part confused me. Why did this character do this? I didn't understand this part. This plot part was confusing. And they would usually kind of laugh and go, oh, well, that part's explained in the book. But as if that settled the matter. But it's like, okay, so what you're saying is in the book, it made sense. In the movie, it's confusing. That's not good adaptation.
No. Yeah. A movie should tell a complete story. You shouldn't have to rely on extra movie material to make sense
Homework.
Of it. So
right.
And the book stands alone, therefore the movie should stand alone too.
Yes, it should tell a complete story, and you should walk out of there and understand what was going on, even if you haven't read the book.
Exactly, and never will read the book.
Yes.
Any more specific changes in, just to highlight a few examples, specific changes in the Wald and Narnia films we didn't like? You mentioned the Melting River, Mel. How about you, Dot? What comes to mind when I say, hey, what's a change in the three Narnia movies that really irked you a lot, that really bothered you?
The green mist.
Okay.
Well, it's just
too easy.
It wasn't even a good villain. I can understand why they wanted to add a villain. Having an antagonist and end of the world battle, blah, 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 is pretty traditional. That's what people expect to see. But it was more like a space amoeba than an actual villain.
A space amoeba.
It was
maybe they should have just done a space amoeba. Maybe that would have been better.
It might have made more sense. But like,
someone's
we don't
steal
know.
That idea. Make that movie. Space Amoeba. The Chronicles of Narnia. Space Amoeba.
Yep. We don't know why it did what it did. We don't know how it existed, why it existed. What even was it? How did it work?
It didn't even eat the people. It just kind of held them, and then they were regurgitated, and they were all right at the end of the movie, and that didn't make
any
sense.
It just did a thing.
Exactly. Like, what was the point of any of it?
You see, I think it's interesting. You guys, your reactions to your primary reason you guys didn't like it is it doesn't work in the movie itself.
Yeah.
Like, you know, never mind the book for a second. Just in the context of the movie itself, it's not a good villain. It's not a good antagonist. Totally agree with that. And on top of that, as if it's not bad enough, I think it's completely contrary to the book. I think the book is about, it's not about trying to save the world. It's about discovery. It's about sailing into the unknown. In fact, there's even a part of the book where Reaper Chief says, you know, so far as I know, we didn't set out on this quest to find anything useful, but to seek honor and adventure.
Right.
So I feel like once you add a reason for the voyage, like, oh, we have to find these seven swords and we have to defeat this green mist, I think it waters down what makes the book magical in the first place.
Exactly.
So that's something where if they had come up with a good villain, a good save the world kind of plot, that actually did work in the movie, I would have been 50-50 on it. I would have said, okay, this is good for the movie. I can't fault them for making a good movie, but this is not the book. This is fundamentally a different story.
Exactly.
That's where I think they've crossed the line Lewis is talking about in that thing I quoted from On Stories, where it's just change the character names and do something else with it. Why are we trying to adapt? Why are you calling it The Voyage of the Dawn Treader?
Yeah.
Because it'll make people come and see it. Maybe.
Exactly.
Money,
it's funny what you said, Dot. They're trying to make it a more traditional approach of having the bad guy at the end. But if the Narnia books were traditional or made very traditionally, I highly doubt I would be on a fan site wanting to talk about them if they were just like everything else.
True.
So there's definitely this tendency that why are we trying to make these books that are... they're memorable because they're still unique, even decades later. Why are we trying to suddenly make them like everything else? We all know the answer to that. Cha-ching. But so to me, it's, oh, but every other movie does it this way, so we have to too. I understand it, but I don't like it and don't agree with it. I'm not going to make any money off this movie, so I don't have to go along with that. But are there any changes you actually did like? It's funny. Some Narnia Webbers might react very negatively to this very question. Like, what do you mean changes I like? That's an oxymoron. But can you guys think of any examples of changes you actually liked in the movie? What do you think, Mel? A change, a departure from the book that you actually liked?
A change that I actually liked was Edmund in the witch's prison. I thought that was a good way of showing how he was coming to realize that he'd made a wrong choice. And
in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, right? He's in the dungeon.
Yeah.
Okay.
And where he meets Mr. Tumnus. I thought that really brings his character arc home a little bit more. In the book, you have his whole Edmund's walk to the witch's castle where he's struggling with what he just did, and he's trying to talk himself into it. And so instead of doing that, they have the scene in the witch's castle with Tumnus where he kind of sees the results of his choice, which I thought was a good way of just showing it.
Yeah, because in a book, you know, Lewis spends a few pages describing Edmund's thoughts, but in a movie, it's very unnatural when you can hear a character's thoughts.
Exactly.
It doesn't feel right. So that was a good visual way of doing it. And also when he sits on the witch's throne is a good way. You know, there's
of
all this stuff in the
book. Of showing
book.
What he wanted to have happen. He's like, oh boy, I'm going to be king. I'm going to get to sit on the throne. And yeah, that didn't turn out so well for him in the end.
Yeah, what Lewis did in the book was great. Hearing his thoughts on the way to the witch's castle, that's great. But in a movie, how can we accomplish the same thing but in a visual way? Him sitting on the throne did that. What Lewis did in several pages, they did in 10 seconds. Him sitting on the throne. How about you, Dot? Some changes you liked?
I actually liked them making Pruna Prismia nice in Prince Caspian. There were not enough sympathetic Telmarine characters in the film. They made her more sympathetic. You felt for her. You saw just how terrible Miraz was. And then it gave you a reason to feel sad when she left at the end. And also a good explanation for, in the upcoming film, for why there's this question of who gets the throne next, because Caspian's cousin isn't around.
Right. Okay. So they actually kind of addressed that, where the book left it hanging.
Yep.
I mean, I would say this would be... I see where you're coming from. I kind of agree with that. I would also say it might be less of a problem if they included more of the romp with Bacchus and Silenus, where all the Telmarines, where that's kind of the reveal. I think we assume at that point in the story, in the book, that, all the Telmarines hate the Narnians. And then we realize, oh no, some of them are delighted that the old days are back. And they didn't like being ruled under Miraz.
Yeah, but in the absence of the romp.
In the very unfortunate absence of that, yes, now there's a need to have more sympathetic Telmarine characters at the end. It doesn't really make the movies ever quite feel like Narnia to me. They get close on occasion. But, you know, it's something Lewis talked about. I was just reading his essay where he talks about how he doesn't really care about excitement in a story. What he loves is atmosphere. And he talks about The Three Musketeers and how much he hates that book because, the way he puts it, there's no weather. When they travel from London to Paris, there's no feeling that London is any different from Paris. And he just likes the feeling of having gone somewhere. That's what he loved about story. So, and I feel that the Narnia books for the movies are notably kind of lacking in atmosphere.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about just the overall tone and feel? You can break them down if you need to by movie, but how do you guys feel about the overall feel of the first three Narnia films?
Well, they're very colorful, which I think visually is good. They went with a kind of a medieval manuscript type feel, which I think is actually what Lewis was going for in a lot of his Narnia stuff, which visually is good. I think the overall effect, though, was still rather generic. It could have been it could have been any fantasy country and not Narnia.
It doesn't quite have a distinct visual identity, does it?
Well, no, but it does. I mean, because it looks very unusual. I mean, the rounded rocks in New Zealand that they use, the natural land bridge in Czechoslovakia where Mr. Tumnus's house is. They pick some gorgeous landscape. But they still managed to get a very generic fantasy feel, which I'm not sure how they pulled that off or where it went wrong, because it is gorgeous.
It didn't feel alive. In Narnia, the trees walk and talk. The water has spirits that live in it.
Yeah.
You get a tracking shot through the forest in the movies, and it's just a forest.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how you would fix that,
But
it's, I think that this says, I hate comparing Narnia to Lord of the Rings all the time, but I think Peter Jackson didn't just film New Zealand. I think he found ways to bring it to life. I think a lot of it is in the filming and the lighting, the music, and when you choose to cut things away. There's very kind of subconscious ways you can make a landscape feel like a character.
Yeah.
And I think, Andrew, I think The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe was his first live-action film. It might be he just didn't have the skills to pull that off. So I think it does kind of lack it. But even just the overall feel, the overall emotion, I hate complaining about, nothing but complaining about the movies, but I guess it's just something positive. I think the scene in Prince Caspian where they first find Aslan's How and they see themselves carved on the walls and they light the fire and it reveals the stone table and there's such a sense of history. Oh, I love the feel of that scene. It's so magical. And I think that really does capture the feeling of Narnia and the feeling of history, the sadness of what has been lost.
Right.
But there's other scenes like the beavers, the dinner table scene where he's describing who Aslan is. And in the movie, or in the book, you almost imagine them almost talking in whispers about, but Aslan, who's he? Well, don't you know he's the king and the prophecy and all that? In the movie, it's largely played for laughs. And it doesn't quite have the same magic and reverence and mystery you get in the book. But so that's where I think that the overall feel, the tone is, it's kind of a mixed bag for me in the movie so far. I hope in The Silver Chair they do a better job on that and really give Narnia a distinct atmosphere and really feel like you've gone somewhere else. I with The Silver Chair, I really want to feel the sense of despair early on and then the hope afterwards, basically. I really want them to deliver on that. I would also say that the themes are kind of a mixed bag with the first three films. What do you guys say about that? You know, for me, Wardrobe's all about redemption and forgiveness. Prince Caspian is longing and nostalgia. Don Treader is discovery and finding your destiny and sailing into the unknown. I thought they kind of botched all of those. But the first two movies, they did, you know, mixed bag, did okay. How do you feel that they did on the theme so far?
I think Prince Caspian failed and that they didn't restore hope at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of ended. Okay, you got the, we're really sad, we long for the old days, we're super nostalgic, and then nothing is really done about it.
Right, like they have a military victory at the end, but
and that's
they
it.
Don't really, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Dot that there's not the sense that the old Narnia has been restored. I mean, you have your victory parade and stuff, but it feels very generic. Oh, we won.
Yeah.
We're going to have a parade and everybody's going to show up.
Yeah. I hate just complaining about this. It's so much easier to complain about the stuff, but because overall we liked, I mean, I know I liked the first two movies, but you know, we're having a discussion about adaptation and it's easier to say, oh, here's a clear example of where it was wrong. So just to clarify, you know, I liked the first two movies overall, but it's
right. Yeah.
It's a lot easier to point out the flaws.
Well, okay, how about something that was well done? How about Lucy's first entrance into Narnia? I think that did kind of capture the magic of stepping into a new world and, you know.
There is good atmosphere in there. Yes. I think largely as a result of Georgie Henley.
Yes.
I think she really sells, because probably in real life a kid would get scared and run, and oh my gosh, it'd be really scary, especially when a half goat man monster emerged, probably in real life. But Georgie Henley, again, there is a piece of that scene that reminds me of what I love about the book, which is how not a trace of cynicism in the Narnia books. And Georgie Henley makes me believe, well, yeah, of course, he would just say, this is amazing. She wouldn't just run away. That's probably not true, but Georgie Henley made me accept that.
Yeah.
And I love that feeling. So yes, that's a great positive example. Definitely some good stuff. Thank you for bringing that up and making this thing more upbeat because we've certainly established the darkness and the hopelessness, but now we have to deliver on the joy as well. Looking ahead to The Silver Chair, I wanted to get a sense of where it could possibly be in theaters late next year, which means this time next year they could be done filming.
Wow.
You believe that? Possibly done filming this time next year. What are you most excited about? We're in that stage now of they haven't messed anything up yet. We have no idea what they're going to do. It's just, oh, imagine saying this. What are you guys most excited about with the silver chair?
Puddle Glum. I'm really looking forward to like his character design, costuming, makeup, whatever they use.
Yeah, he's an okay character, I guess. Only my favorite character. Obviously, I agree with you. That's what I'm most excited to see. And I'm also most concerned about him, too, though, because I can see them easily getting him wrong and just making him, oh, an Eeyore character, kind of two-dimensional. Oh, well, he's just sad all the time. But I think he's a lot more much more complicated character than that, and I'll probably talk about that in future episodes. So simultaneously, one thing I'm most excited about and also concerned about.
I actually am looking forward to them crossing the Giant's Bridge and meeting the Lady of the Green Kirtle on the other side. I think that's always been kind of a exciting moment in the book for me. And so it'll be interesting to see how they pull it off.
And a tricky scene, too. There's a thread in this of the casting character discussion forum on how obvious should it be to the audience that should they kind of know that, oh, that's the bad guy and that's Rillian? Or should it be a complete surprise?
It's like, who did they just meet on the road? How are they going to fit into the story?
Right. How much should it be? Oh, no, the characters just missed them. You know, should that be part of the drama or should it be a total reveal? I'm really concerned they're going to rush through the scene where Jill meets Aslan. I think they'll just say, all right, I'm Aslan. Here's the four signs. Go. Just get what they need from that scene for the plot and move on. But that's a character scene. That's Jill being forced to drink from the stream, even though there's a scary lion there. And she just has to take that step. Don't rush through that scene if you're listening, filmmakers. That's a character moment for Jill. It's not just a plot scene. Anyway, anything else you guys wanted to add about the silver chair?
Yes, it's mostly straightforward, but people expect a battle out of fantasy films, and there just really isn't.
Oh, but there
could
be. I don't
know how they're going to handle that.
They could easily add one, though, with the gnomes at the end. They could have them break out, fight Cara Paravel for several minutes, then they kill the queen and all the gnomes fall down Phantom Menace style.
Yeah, but it's one of those, the destruction of Underworld is actually fairly dramatic, and so it doesn't have to be a battle. It could be the flood rising and the gnomes running away. I mean, that's exciting. I mean, if you're just looking for excitement at the end of the climax.
Well, they could. I wonder what Lewis would say to that, because in the book, that's the obvious direction to go with that scene is, oh, we have to get out of here before it floods, run away. But no, Lewis kind of does that, but he spends a lot more time talking about Bizzum. And again, atmosphere, the magic and wonder. In the middle of our lives are at risk, but we're going to take a moment and say, oh, wouldn't it be cool to go to the bottom of the world and describing liquid diamonds and gold and stuff like that? Lewis still takes the time to go into those details. And I don't know if I understand in the flow of a film where it might be difficult to get that in, but I hope they don't lose sight of atmosphere. I hope they don't just, oh, we've got to have the big climax at the end and that's it.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it'll be really challenging, I think. With there's how do you handle the multiple climaxes of the silver chair being destroyed, defeating the witch, escaping Underland, the bittersweetness of Caspian dying, and then Anhun actually said they could cut out the epilogue at the end. I understand that idea, like with Caspian and Aslan's country. I understand where that's coming from. You don't need it for the story, but so much of the silver chair is about despair. And it's completely hopeless. For Jill and Eustace, it's hopeless at Experiment House. For Narnia, it's hopeless. Caspian's about to die without an heir. And we need to feel that even though Caspian's died, there's actually hope.
Yeah.
That it's not just he's dead. So we got to deliver on that joy at the end, one way or another, even if they have to do something different with it.
Yeah, that epilogue is just so important for Jill and Eustace's character development.
Uh-huh. To see that death is not the end. You know,
yes.
So that's what they have to deliver on emotionally. Even if they do it in a different way, that's what they have to, the effect should be the same.
Yeah, don't skip out on the hope again.
Yeah, that a good overall summary of adaptation? Let's get to the essentially the same place, even if we go a different road.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bring it all together. All right, enough of that. Let's stump in Arnie Weber.
All right.
That being me this time.
All right. Question. Today's question was submitted by Elk Rinden. You ready?
Let's do it.
Can you name the 9 fawns present on the dancing lawn in Prince Caspian?
Oh, come on. Come on now. Okay. I mean, yeah, I did. I guess I did ask you to speak horse 2 weeks ago. The 9 fawns on the dancing lawn. As a matter of fact, I can.
All right.
No, I can't actually. I just wanted to have that moment of you guys looking surprised. I'm definitely going to have to blow Queen Susan's horn here. Get some help. So I'm thinking multiple choice would probably not be very helpful. So I am going to look it up in the book. Give me a second to grab my copy of Prince Caspian.
Okay.
All right. I have 30 seconds to look this up in the book. Just let me know when my time starts. And then if Mel, you just kind of, sorry, Dot, just give me some updates every now and then on my time.
Okay. Ready?
Yep.
And go.
Okay. The Dancing Lawn chapter. The people that lived in hiding is, I think, where it is. People that lived in hiding. Fawns.
15 seconds.
Dozens of fawns. All right, I think I've got it. Mentius, Obentius, Dumnus, Volans, Valtinus, Gerbius, Nimienus, Nasus, and Oskins.
Yes,
you got them.
All right, okay. I mean, I can't complain because I asked you to speak horse 2 weeks ago, so I'll take it, and I will accept my 1 point.
Yes, well, with 1 point, you are our reigning trivia champion.
I'm now in the lead, okay, by 1 point. And in 2 weeks from now, I don't think I've told her this yet, but in 2 weeks from now, Twigs is going to be our contestant. So if you want to, if you think you can stump Patter Twigs' pal herself, you can, once again, submit trivia questions to podcast@narniweb.com. Just keep stumping the subject. Don't include the answer, but please include the source. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We're going to be back here on Monday, May 1st. We'll be kicking off our Silver Chair reading group. Please post a comment below our post in the narniweb.com discussion forum. Narniweb is also on Facebook and Twitter. Until next time,
further up and further in.